disability and alleviate adverse environmental conditions. Again, you're seeing that environmental focus in, mixed in with transportation. And again, targeting tree plantings, green stormwater infrastructure projects, meaning your bioswales, whales, your rain barrels, you know, all of those different non-structural elements that you can provide in order to alleviate or to help the stormwater percolate through, like permeable pavement is another one, to really help that water run off to control that. Speaking of environmental, we have the Comprehensive Environmental and Climate Actions Plan, or CCAP. Again, this is fairly new as well, and four of the eight goals specifically address emissions reduction, air quality, water quality, and water quality and public health. Some of the goals are access to sustainable, affordable transportation options, and of course, protecting our resources from flooding. Again, you're talking about more green spaces and, you know, obviously air quality is another major goal. So some of the actions, again, transportation demand management, again, that's your strategies like telecommuting, ride sharing, bike sharing, those type of measures to reduce the demand for parking. Plant drought tolerant and native vegetative species, again, your blue-green infrastructure in the public realm, and your buffer zones to protect residents from harmful emissions. Trinity River Corridor Comprehensive Plan. This is several different areas or districts within the city and with the assets and challenges that they face. There's a lot of public input for these different areas. And some of those, well, the areas there are South Trinity Forest District, I-45 Gateway, North Trinity Forest, Downtown Lakes, West Dallas District, Stemmons District, and the Elm Fork District. And some of the actions and programs that are in the plans, for instance, for the North Trinity Forest area, number 10 in their action is addresses infill housing. And so since we know that they're calling for infill housing, and then they're also addressing adaptive reuse within that plan, you know, those, you know, as we know, have transportation implications. You know, infill housing and adaptive reuse are going to have some parking challenges that come along with those, and that's why those were, you know, those are notable. They also have developed urban design enhancements, and a lot of those, of course, are for walkability and transit related, you know, bus stops, bus shelters, things like that. In the Oak Cliff area specifically, that was amended, and they have some goals to support future higher densities that emphasize that walkability and bikeability. So again, we know what their focus is now in those areas, and that could help us focus more on the parking as well. Also minimize negative impacts of that higher density redevelopment on established single family neighborhoods and address traffic and parking. So again, there's a parking focus within those plans as well. I believe this is our last plan that we're looking at here, Connect Dallas. And this is actually a plan that's in progress. Transportation Department, of course, is taking the lead, and they're in collaboration with their partners. That's North Central Texas Council of Governments, DART, and NTTA, and TxDOT, Texas Department of Transportation. Their anticipated completion is October of this year. And they have a lot of trends that were identified in different cities I know they use benchmark cities as well, similar to Dallas. And the trends here are movement away from single occupancy vehicles. The trend is toward on-demand deliveries, you know, like, and fleet management, you know, Uber and Lyft. Of course, we're all seeing a lot of an increase in those areas. Planning for autonomous vehicles and supporting mass transit efficiency and utilization. So one of their six driving principles is environmental sustainability, and that's encouraging residents to travel by transit, biking, or walking. And some of those actions are to coordinate with TxDOT and, again, integrate the technology and innovation that's out there today. Also, pedestrian and bicycle connections are specifically calling out, you know, some connections to be made. And then some smart city elements, or the Southern Gateway Innovation District in particular here. I believe that concludes what I have today. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those. If not, I'll go ahead and turn this over to our next speaker, Andrea.
All right, committee, any questions? Okay, hearing none. Mrs. Drea, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good morning. Let me share my presentation. So I'm going to present the parking studies, the national ones and the local ones that you have in your report, because there is a lot of information and I wanted to actually engage in a discussion about findings in those reports. My presentation is more like an overview of what's in there than pointing out ideas. So the way I looked at it, I started from big to small, obviously, and I wanted to see the theories and what is out there and what is guiding, what are the guiding principles that they keep evolving within their respective or professional circles of engineers with respect to parking. So I found that two schools of thought, I would call them, are this Victoria Transport Policy Institute, which is Todd Lippman, and Donald Shoup. They keep being referenced in parking studies by APA studies. So I was thinking, okay, that's the source. So I went and I looked everything I could find online for free, because I wanted to be able to share the entire content or to put links so you can have unrestricted access to that information. And then I found another, and then I was looking into more focused research and data, the same guiding principle to have unrestricted access to that information, because there's a lot of free information out there and all of it is good. So for the focused data and research, you'll see ratio comparisons, multifamily analysis, fees in lieu, convertible parking garages, watershed urbanism, and solutions for parking. Now, for Dallas, I started again from big to small. So there are some regional or within the city of Dallas, large area plans that study only parking, like the one for Midtown that offers solutions, the one for Preston Center that was extremely interesting because we had the assessment in 2006 and then we have another one in 2019. So you can check. And then the same with downtown. What I found interesting is that we have some studies that date back to 2001, so you can see how it all progressed. And then I have an asterisk here. The Economic Development Department let us know yesterday that the strategic parking plan for downtown is actually going to be updated, and City Council would vote on to continue an update on that at the end of September. So again, downtown, again, although it's a TOD area, I think it's a good case study that gives us an overview, an image of what's out there, and some tools for parking. And then studies, again, what are the design standards? Again, I was trying to see everything that applies to parking, even design standards, even green parking lots. So that's why I looked for at the Dallas Water Gardens, for instance. The maps from Trust for Public Land I found them very interesting. And now looking at Lori's presentation, a lot of the plans do have the goal of reducing flooding. So those maps from Trust for Public Land, they're again, they have public access. You'll see where are the major priorities for those. And then I dived into like parking studies per se, and those are, as you see in the report, they're multi-use for instance, shopping centers, although I think those are the best examples. We have a lot of parking studies that were submitted to us. We selected some that we thought were interesting and telling a story. And then the engineers were very, very kind to send us a lot of information for their observation for multifamily. For instance, restaurants with drive-through showed up to be an interesting case study too. And then general merchandise or the bigger convenience stores. So you'll find in the material, you'll find ideas and topics. You'll find this Transportation Demand Management Encyclopedia that has a big portion related to parking. You'll find parking problems and solutions and how the experts are defining parking problems. And I was very pleased to find that there is a way to quantify that. And I found, and you'll see in the report on page 9, the level of service by walking distance. And also there's a chart showing or table showing the level of service per type of uses. So how long are people inclined, or how long are they accepted to walk for a use and for a distance, which to me that was very interesting. A lot of material about parking costs, about construction of the parking, but then I found material regarding the all life cycle of parking, like maintenance, ecologic impact, or how do you quantify that? So there is more material than just what is the cost of building the parking, is also what it costs over time. An interesting thing about shared parking, flexible parking requirements, I found few interesting information. A lot of tables with solution comparisons and ranking, the impacts of on affordability and on housing, and that I found a lot of material on that too, and it's in your in the report. Parking reform, everybody refers to that, and obviously everybody has a different way of looking at it, but I found a lot of tools. And what does it mean to eliminate parking requirements, and what are the challenges that it poses? Donald Shoups talks a lot about it. Continuing, cruising for parking analysis in CBDs, just to show that the ratios that we have in downtown right now is actually part of a national trend, and that we're there, that's how it's supposed to be. Obviously a critic of ITE, and then again, all of these tools, fees in lieu, these are the tools that I'm more fascinated with, so probably I was biased in selecting this, like fees in lieu, unbundling parking, parking cash out, all of these types. Right sizing parking per land use type, share mobility, racial comparisons, and square footage comparisons. That's what I also found interesting, and I included in the report, is not just the ratio numbers to numbers, let's also see how it compares, like how much land parking actually takes compared to how much land you take when you dine, when you leave, when you go to the office. And then analysis for multifamily, again, convertible parking garages and watershed urbanism. These are like green parking lots, and how can you repurpose? How can you make this more sustainable in the future? And for the local studies, again, an overview, Midtown has that solution for automated vehicle for shared parking. That's an awesome study. It's a big one. I didn't excerpt it. I just put a link to it because it's worth a read from top to bottom. Analysis of public parking garages for Preston Center for downtown. It's in the material. Detailed analysis of Preston Center. How public versus private parking is being used. And as I was saying, like the comparisons between the two studies, and the same with downtown. Downtown also contains a strategic parking plan. That's also, I don't know if we have many in the city or if that's the only one we have in the city, but to me that was very interesting. There is a lot of information about the TOTs. I was trying to stay away from those because they're not part of what Lori and me are doing, and I acknowledge that downtown is a TOD, but again, there's a toolbox in there that I think we need to look when we do all of this. Urban design standards, and then the maps. Now, what were the local studies? North Park, as I was saying, and again, I was mesmerized, and I think there are a few more. David kept sending me a few more parking studies to compare, to observe, to validate those numbers. What I found fascinating in the study for North Park is the way they calculate and the way you look at it, not for the busiest day of the year, but also not for the lowest use day of the year. So when are you... how are you parking it? So I think that's why I left a lot of material regarding North Park in there, because for me that was telling me how engineers or how are we looking at parking. And then all the problems that these large shopping centers are posing, because you can see each parking study is attacking this problem differently, but it for sure tells a story, because I think this is the abundance of parking studies that we're getting for the large shopping centers that are developed or struggling to change the uses within themselves. And you will see in the comparison tables, whenever you introduce a restaurant, you kind of like have to adjust all the numbers to make sure that the restaurant can fit in there parking wise. And also it was interesting to compare the problems of large shopping centers with with a look on the smaller shopping centers, and there are very like in a denser area, how are they parked, how are people using it, and what is the walkability factor of it. So I one of the engineers again was very, very kind to provide a study on that. I found fascinating data regarding multifamily, senior housing, restaurants, and convenience stores. I do have 4 images that I found interested. I have them in my back pocket if you want me to show them to you. Fine, if not, fine, we can stop now and dive into questions.
Awesome, Mrs. Drea, thank you. Questions, committee. Commissioner McGregor, did you have one?
Yes, I will. I didn't want to go first because I always seem to go first, but I will anyway. So, Mr. Drea, it goes without saying, both you and Lori, thank you for a tremendous amount of relevant information and helpful. My question is, as you read the experts' number of articles and so on, is there sort of a common thread? Could you reduce it to basically what's their recommendation of these couple experts that you mentioned at the beginning?
I found that everybody explores everything. It's common knowledge, or it's pretty obvious that, for instance, Donald Shoup is recommending doing away with parking minimums, but not just that. So he has a big, more complex solution to that involves a lot of departments and not just zoning. So I need to always pause and think, okay, we're just talking about zoning now and the requirements. So we're not talking about an entire parking reform. So all the experts are talking about an entire parking reform that involves a coordinated effort when it comes to parking. So it's not, it's not a common solution. All of them are adjusted to situations, and I found at least 2 or 3 solutions. Like there is a material that's called 10 steps to achieve a parking reform. But if you look into those 10 steps, only a few of them refer to zoning. And it doesn't necessarily say, okay, you have to do maximums or minimums. It's simply a combination. So I don't know, it's a complex material. I'm sorry I don't have a more targeted answer, but I think all the situations are adjustable.
You did ask my question. If what I understand you're saying is that there's not one line that one size that fits all. It's a complex issue, and it has several moving parts. Thank you.
Commissioner Gregor?
Yes?
I'd like to add to that in that the direction that we're going, and by going through all of these and by giving you all this information, we are taking that, sifting it, looking through it to see what those common threads are as we're going through this and see how and what that applicability could be in balance. So we will be coming back to you with a lot of that information in the upcoming meetings.
Excellent. Thank you.
Other committee members, questions? Scroll here.
Yes, Madam Chair. This is Mark Reeves.
Mr. Reeves, proceed.
Okay, thank you. Around the affordability of housing, we keep coming back to that on all of our ZOAC meetings. The unbundling of the parking, requiring businesses to actually have that two rate where I'm paying X for my apartment or my triplex or duplex, and if I want a parking place, then I have to pay extra more. Is that on the table for us? And that might be a question for not only zoning, but also for Laura.
Yeah.
Commissioner Reeves. I'm sorry, not Commissioner Reeves. Mr. Reeves. So there again, it is all of those discussion items and things that we have come across, we are looking into and will be coming back with information regarding the concept and the thought around those points.
So you would say
it is on the table. It is something that we're looking at.
And that is something that we could potentially legally do, and we wouldn't get pushback. We might get pushback from the development community or the landowners, but if we could potentially do that, is what you're saying.
Mr. Reeves, this is Laura Morrison. Are you asking, could we require, a multifamily development to charge rent for parking to the tenants?
Yes, like I get my DCAD over too much money property values, and my land is worth more than my house, and it's actually, basically two bills that equal X. So it'd be the same thing. I'm coming in. I don't have to pay my parking space. Or, I was reading too, if my wife and I both have individual cars, then they were like, no, we'll just get down to one car. And that really does start doing it, and it makes something more affordable. Is that something we could potentially require across, citywide and with what we're addressing?
I'm really not sure, because we might encounter some issues with, interference with two private parties and how they want to execute a contract. So that would be just, my first thought that that would probably be the issue we would encounter there. And, in the development code, when it comes to zoning, the city definitely doesn't get involved in, market rates for rents or for land or structures for purchase. That's not really a zoning function. So I'm just not sure we could put that in the development code. But it's okay. We can think about it.
I mean, that is definitely a prevalent, reading through all of that. Everybody talked about unbundling in study after study after study. So you know, my question, are other cities actually requiring that, and are they actually successful doing that? And if they are successful, how did they pull that off? I guess that would be one of my questions. And my last question, if I can, one more really quick on that, Chair, is that opportunity zones. We have the, 14 different opportunity zones in Dallas, and one of the studies, and I don't remember which one, did have something about in your, you know, basically it would parallel to our opportunity zones, where you could get a reduction in parking based on the opportunity zone. So if it's a lower social economic area where right now parking is preventing them from building affordable units in a certain area, can we actually scale that where maybe in some places you don't get that, but we're encouraging more of that multifamily, more affordable housing in the areas that actually need it via our existing opportunity areas? So my question would be, could we potentially bundle this parking reduction somehow into our identified opportunity area in the city of Dallas?
I'll look at that.
I would like to just address a part of that. You started with the question that if other cities are doing the unbundled parking in their ordinances, and there are some, certainly we saw those, I guess, in an earlier meeting in Seattle, there were several that had the unbundled parking. Seattle, I believe, was one, but there were two or three other ones at least that had those in their parking codes, you know, whereby they just, the apartment communities or properties just have to show both prices. You know, one, Laura, one price would show if they do not have any parking, what the cost would be for that unit. And then the other contract would be what the cost of that rental unit is with parking. So it's just showing, you know, how they're actually marketing that unit, or what price the unit actually is with and without parking.
I'm also trying to understand better this concept of unbundling parking and how can it be a zoning issue. I think it goes, that's why I put it together with a lot of other tools, and I think it goes hand in hand with free parking or not. And I think at the second that we say that I don't even know how to phrase this, but I think is parking going to be free or not? And if the parking is allowed to be priced, then I think that's also a mechanism of unbundling it. But again, I don't want to venture because I know there are a lot more tools, and I honestly don't, like, we're still thinking about it.
I'll make a point, I think, is that everybody talks about unbundling and everybody talks about the price of free parking. It's not free. And it's one of those cases where those less fortunate are subsidizing somebody else to be able to park for free. And so people without cars are actually paying that price for me. Plus, people that might not live in my neighborhood are also paying the price because they can't get affordable housing because of all the parking requirements. So it seems like the biggest needle move that we could potentially do is to eliminate free parking, or at least put the cost where it actually is, so the poor are not subsidizing the rich. It's a double whammy. And to me, that seems like the number one thing to do for something immediately would be an ordinance around that area. And potentially, and again, you know, these opportunity areas, if we need more affordable housing, we need more affordable housing everywhere, not just, you know, in one section versus the other. So to me, that is an all-encompassing plan. And every single study I was reading talked about the price of free parking, how expensive it is and how it's subsidized, and then how unbundling it could, you know, actually make people be able to afford something they might not be able to afford because they don't have a car. So to me, that is kind of one of the linchpins. So I'll get off my soapbox. And I am at my standing desk, but I'll get off my soapbox. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reeves. Committee, any other comments, questions? Okay, seeing none, it is now 9:55. Is it all right if I go to members of the public and ask for input? Would that be, is now a good time? Ms. Udrea, Ms. Levy, are you okay with that?
Yes, yes, unless you have more questions again.
Okay, no, I think let's go to public input from the speakers. We have two speakers who are signed to speak today. Mr. Jacobs, if you could get Matt Jacobs on the line, please, Mr. King.
Okay, I'm looking for him in the list of attendees. He's not there that I can see. Yes, ma'am.
I believe he may be MJ in the attendees.
Ah, there we are. Okay, I'll unmute him and get him ready. And I'll also queue up Mr. Zara.
That would be awesome. Okay.
All right, Mr. Jacobs.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, and Mr. Jacobs, welcome. Thank you for listening online and joining us today. If you will state your name and address for the record, and then take a few minutes to offer some thoughts. We have a CPC hearing, a briefing that begins at 10:30, so I'd like to adjourn our meeting by 10:15 to give the commissioner some time to get ready. So if you'll take about 3 or 4 minutes, that would be great, and I'll set a timer. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I just had questions on two areas really, Max. Matt Jacobs, resident of Parkdale here in Dallas. New question I have regarding the unbundling discussion is, if the requirement for parking was reduced or eliminated for multifamily, wouldn't developers naturally look at doing that as an option? So if they didn't have to provide something, they didn't have to pay for something up front, wouldn't they look at that as a way to pass that on to their renters and potentially get people into those units? And then my second question was about the Board of Adjustment. So when somebody goes forward with that process, what kind of cost is it to them? Do they have to get a zoning attorney? Do they have to get parking studies? What kind of things is it that they have to bring to the city? Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Udrea, Ms. Levy, would you like to tackle those questions?
I would only add that I have included a study from the National Apartment Association. And again, in looking at these studies, I would factor in the fact that sometimes it's also customer driven. So it's not necessarily a math formula that gives you this number of parking, or it is driven by the market and the market is the customer. So yeah, that is a valid point, but I think they both work together. So the study that you have in your packet and is also on our website from the National Apartment Association shows how the customer has behaved more than what is the ratio, what the developers want. So shows how many of them do have cars, how many do have preferences for cars and stuff like that. So I think, again, we always need to keep that in mind.
I guess maybe to clarify, I guess the question is, unless if I have to say, if you have all this empty parking, would it ever make sense that they were required to build, would it ever make sense for them to unbundle it? I guess is my question. If they already had to build it, they already took that cost, so they have to pay for it somehow, right?
Yes, and again, I understood that, and I'm
okay
in looking at the parking studies, and that to me was very revealing to compare the ratio that is required with what is provided, and then what is actually being used. And if you look at those studies for the TODs that COG has on the website, again, those are TODs, so you have another factor in, which is transit, but still, you will see that chart that shows what is required by the city, what is provided, which is usually a little bit more, and then what is used, which is less than what is required and what is built. So that's why I'm saying, like, I think we have few actors here that actually establish how this is being built, then I don't know how to even those out. I mean, I don't know, that'd be Lord, how to even those out.
Thank you, Ms. Andrea. I believe you also had a question about the Board of Adjustment. Anybody want to tackle that?
I can address that.
Thank you.
This is Donna Mormon. And joint Board of Adjustment does not require an attorney, a zoning consultant, or anything. An applicant may go to the Board of Adjustment, submit an application for the request for a special exception to the parking. The fee for that is, let me read that to you. And special exception to off-street parking requirements is $900 plus $100 per parking space variance or special exception requested. So depending on how many parking spaces they're asking to be special accepted, that would be kind of advice on top of the 900 base. And I will add that the Board of Adjustment can only reduce parking, special accept parking to 25% of the required minimum parking spaces.
And about how much time do those cases take to process? Is there a general time frame?
So there is when you make your application, there's a cutoff date for the different applications that are taken for the Board of Adjustment. And generally, depending on the application deadline, they are scheduled for about later to be in front of one of the panels of a Board of Adjustment. That is taking into account that an exception to that would be when the Board of Adjustment skips holidays or months where starting only one board meeting, one panel meeting, 1 month, and then to the next month. But the majority of the time, it's about a 6 week trip from submittal of application by that deadline to the Board of Adjustment.
Thank you, Ms. Mormon. Mr. Jacobs, thank you for joining us today. If you have additional questions, please feel free to forward them. And I guess it can be directed to Ms. Mormon, who can then distribute them for response. But thank you for joining us. The next speaker we have who signed up is Mr. Zara. He's becoming a regular.
I'm here every time. Can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Zara, if you will identify yourself and give us your address and proceed.
My name is Ed Zara. I live at 1003 Valencia, Dallas, Texas, 75223. My phone number is 214-688-1234.
Oh, you don't have to give us that. Don't worry about giving us that. Just keep going.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. My first question is, are the comments strictly about the parking issues we spoke about today?
Yes. That's noticed on the agenda, sir, so we have to stick to the items that are noticed on the agenda.
Okay, that's fine. My comment on the reports that I heard, all the studies that you're quoting are all missing the most important thing, how it relates to affordable housing. And I keep bringing this up, being a investor and a property owner, both of multifamily and office buildings. But it's the cost of dirt that's driving the affordable housing out of a city like Dallas. When the land costs are just going off the charts, construction costs, every landlord that I know, myself included, and especially with all the influx of residents coming to Dallas, this is not a better time to be a landlord. And of course, cash flow is the main thing that we do as landlords. And as the inner city gets more popular, the rents go up. And unfortunately, the affordable housing market is being pushed out. We're Pleasant Grove, where they can get anything realistic. So I think that's a big part that is never coming up in these studies that you all consider, because parking is a given when you develop these things. I know if I have properties, I allow two cars per single family. If I have a duplex, I allow four cars. That's on my property. I have to provide parking. Doesn't count the street. Office buildings, it's 3-1 and sometimes now 4-1. And we have to have that much parking on our buildings, even though it might not be used. And it's a big problem with the office market, not knowing how to figure out parking when you're required to be competitive, be 3-1, 4-1. And then when they move in and they take alternative means to get there, their use drops to 2-1. You have all this vacant parking you pay for, but it's not being used. But believe me, the cost of the parking is transferred to the tenant. Every cost is transferred to the tenant. So I just want to be sure that you consider the cost of dirt and the development cost as one of the main factors that's causing this crisis. That's all.
Thank you, Mr. Zara. Points noted. Thank you very much. All right, committee, do we have any other questions, comments, thoughts before we move on to the next item on the agenda? I do have one question, and that is this. This was a very robust presentation with a lot of information to read and assimilate, synthesize. And I, for one, am going to have to go back and reread everything. And that may include rewatching today's meeting. Is there a recording of that available now? I mean, I understood from our last meeting there was some question that recordings from our ZOAC meetings were not being uploaded to the website. Ms. Moorman or someone else, could you address that, please?
Mike, did we end up being able to record today?
No, unfortunately, the storage capacities exceeded on our WebEx account for the City of Dallas. Because they've been storing every public meeting on the WebEx servers and not migrated those meetings into the city servers. When that happens, we'll be able to record again. But right now, we're at full capacity. We couldn't record today.
So, Commissioner Murphy, we do have a manual recording going. So we may not get the full video, but we do have the audio.
Okay.
I don't know what quality it will be, but we will get that loaded up onto the website.
Okay, I think that's extraordinarily helpful. And will we be able to catch up with other ZOAC meetings previous to today, or are they already on the website?
They're not right there. We have to jump through some hoops to be able to load them onto the website. So we are working on that.
Okay.
I will say that all of the information, of course, the presentations will be posted, on the website, all the reports will be on the website, and all of the studies and reports that are referred to are in the reference documents on the website as well. So you can
Okay. Okay, that's helpful. Okay, thank you, and thank you for your hard work. I know in these times it's difficult to work with the challenges we have, but to the extent we can put up anything about the meeting, the audio will suffice, I feel sure. So thank you very much. The next item on the agenda is approval of meeting minutes from our August 20th, 2020 meeting. Committee members, you have received the minutes. Are there any changes? Hearing none, do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
Thank you.
Mr. Hall, second.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor to approve the minutes from the August 20th, 2020 meeting as submitted, seconded by Mr. Hall. All in favor, vote aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, it is now 10:10.
Thank you.
I would like to... Yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Before we really get through it, I just have one comment. It's okay.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Commissioner McGregor.
Thank you. Just to state the obvious, I just want to say that Dallas is very lucky to have Andrea and Lori in this group, because we're working on a very impactful process. We really are lucky to be able to have the quality and caliber of work that we're getting from them too. So
I think this is what you do now on Zoom if you agree with something. So yeah, exactly. So I hope you feel feeling the support. So thank you very much. For those of you the audio recording of this, we were giving the signal of support with a double hand wave. So thank you, Commissioner McGregor, for making that comment. It is good to see all of you. Continue to stay well. Reread the report. There's a lot there, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. This meeting is adjourned. It is now 10:11 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.